Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is
marvelous.
Great.
And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by Habs Eyes on the Prize.com.
Sandin, Matthews, D-Lander, huge stop, Carey Price.
Traveled down the wall, stolen away. Here's a 2-on-0. Caulfield gets it to Suzuki. Heatman scores.
Well, the opponent is part of it. They did a really good job here today of really clogging things up in the neutral zone, protecting their blue line. As I said, the game was played a lot differently tonight than the previous two, where they really pushed and really came at us. Today, they sat back a lot.
And we're back with another preview from one of the other teams in the Atlantic Division, not the Athletic, but as it seems to be a trend for me here this year. But anyways, we're going down Highway 7 from Montreal down into Toronto. It's one of the biggest rivalry in hockey. One says it's the capital of hockey. The other says it's the mecca of hockey. We all know the difference between the teams. One is blue and white. The other is obviously blue, white, and red. One has the passion. One has the ice. And we all remember what happened a couple of months ago, especially with a smile, as we can see it on Amazon Prime once more. And I'm joined today by Omar, who covers the Maple Leafs, and you can follow him because he's great at TikTok Omar at Twitter. Please do that. And thank you for joining us, Omar. I promise it won't be too much of a hassle for you to get through this half hour.
That's probably not true. It's going to be a big hassle, that's for sure. Just remembering all that was last year and trying to kind of get it out of your mind. But hey, it's a good day to talk about it. You know, the new season's coming up. So thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
I follow football, and I've followed football for quite some time because I'm quite old. But one thing that struck me this offseason really with the Maple Leafs was a similarity in a way. And you see it with the series of Prime as well, because they follow the big teams around the world. And can you really have a team of Galacticos like Real Madrid has in football? Or had in football, maybe.
When it comes to a team like the Leafs, and I think this is a big reason as to why a lot of people are frustrated or anything that's Leafs related, is that there's so many eyes on the team, and it's talked about so much. And it kind of comes down to the idea of media perception, right? And everyone focuses on the media when it comes to the Leafs, but I think it's just because of how many people care and how many people want to see the team win. So whether it's good or bad, and unfortunately it's a lot of bad, people want to see what's going on. So I think what's happening with this documentary and why it took place is that the belief was that they thought, last season was going to be special, which makes it worse. And two, they just knew whether it was, Leafs fans or people that hated the Leafs, people would watch it and try to get into it. So I guess it's kind of the overall perspective of it, even though I think, just watching the documentary myself, it's a little evil. reminding us of what took place last year, especially when we're trying to forget how disappointing of a loss it was.
It all comes down to this: like, you have the superstars, and you do have that. You have Tavares, you have Matthews, you have Marner, you have obviously, in some ways, he doesn't count as that, but obviously, some Swedish, he does. You have mm-hmm. Nylander.
Yeah.
And you have quite a few around them, but those are the top four, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The defense is not that set, and the goalkeepers are a bit of a question mark, but can you really build a team to outscore the opponent in today's hockey and have that much money in cap space tied up in four players?
I mean, I think that's the question that the Leafs are continuously trying to prove, right? Because as soon as it happened, like as soon as, you know, Tavares got brought over, Matthews got his deal, Marner got his deal, Nylander got his deal, that's been the big question, is whether you can do it, because it's never been done. Right. And generally that's not how you go, especially in a cap world. Right. A lot of people will bring up teams like Detroit, you know, who were just stacked and had star after star, Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer, but the salary cap wasn't in place then. So now, you know, after seasons of examples, it's getting more difficult to believe that it's possible. But I think because of the talent that the team has, it can work. But it makes it very difficult, because if you have instances like, for example, last year in the playoffs where your stars aren't showing up, you know, obviously John Tavares had that horrific injury, you know, Matthews and Marner weren't really feeling it. They weren't really getting their usual touches. And, you know, the only player of the big four who stood up was Nylander, but that's just not enough. And I think what you see a lot in the playoffs every single year is you always see some depth player come out of nowhere and just really take control of a series or really have a significant impact. And when you have so much of your cap dedicated to four players, it makes it difficult to kind of find those diamonds in the rough. So it's either you really have to go on that scavenger hunt for those type of depth players, or you hope that, you know, a young player on an ELC can kind of outperform their contract. And I think that's kind of the perspective that Kyle Dubas went in heading into this season with, you know, still relying on the core four. And, you know, once the Leafs have some type of playoff success, it's going to be on the backs of those four players. You see it every year, like those top players or those top teams that win championships, that win series, their best players are their best players, right? Tampa's third line was the main focus of Yanni Gord, Blake Coleman, and Barclay Goudreau. But like Braden Point was Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov was Nikita Kucherov. So you need to have your star players kind of, you know, play to what they are. But at the same time, in those instances where, you know, your star players aren't feeling it, or maybe they have really strenuous defensive matchups, you need to have that depth that can kind of step in and score that goal every here and there. It can't only be Jason Spezza who scores in your bottom six. And I think that's the perspective that Dubas had over the offseason by bringing in players like Michael Bunting, like Nick Ritchie, like Andre Kasha, and maybe a younger player like Nick Robertson can, you know, play a couple games here and there. So I think that's the perspective, or at least that's the mindset that the Leafs management is trying to go forth, is that, yes, we'll rely on our core four, but because there's so much money wrapped up in our core four, we kind of have to rely on players who are maybe making less, but are kind of outperforming their contracts. And then hopefully that gets the job done at some point.
One of these players that probably will outperform his contract is someone I've watched quite a bit before, and spoken to as well, but that's Rasmus Sandin. Is he ready to take that responsibility that, you know, has been spoken of for the last 2 years?
Yeah, I think so. Personally, watching Rasmus this season, especially in that first game, I've just felt that he wasn't as good as he was, or what he's shown in the past. But again, it is just the preseason, but there are a lot of great things that Rasmus does. You know, his skating is unbelievable. He's a dynamic player. His vision, his ability to move the puck at the blue line and set up shots right from the point for deflections. So I think when it comes to, or when you think of the overall future of the Leafs defense, Rasmus Sandin is a player you definitely focus and hone in on. And especially when you think of the future of Morgan Rielly entering the last year of his deal, you know, if he moves on, then you like to think that Rasmus will be the person that can kind of step up and fulfill at the very least a top four spot. But heading into this season, if Rielly is still here, you know, Sandin will be on the bottom pair. But, you know, maybe he outperforms Rielly and gets that spot on the top power play. So there's a lot of different questions there. But yeah, I think Sandin has been the defensive prospect, or not prospect anymore, but the defensive player in the system that people who like deeply cover the team have been focused on. And I think that a lot of fans overall are starting to get more excited about, just because he really does seem like a very good all-around defensive player that has that high-end skill. And I think that's what the Leafs are going to be looking for and expecting from him this season.
Looking at the other Swede on the blue line in many ways, that had a similar trajectory and a similar vision from the Leafs fans at the draft was Timothy Liljegren. And he hasn't really blossomed into that player that we all thought that he would be, including myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think the Timothy Liljegren era in Toronto is so fascinating because in his draft year, like I think the beginning of the season, like he was being talked about as a top five pick. But then obviously, you know, some complications took place during that year and he just fell. So watching that draft and just watching him fall and fall and fall, and it's like, wow, the Leafs are 17. Oh my God, he's available. And then we got him. It's like, whoa, okay, this might be that moment where you know, down the line, you see this player like excel, and it's like, how did they fall so far? Like, what were the scouts thinking? But for Liljegren, I think there have been some growing pains, but at the same time, I also don't think he's been given a full opportunity to kind of run on the Leafs team. And I think it's a combination of one, they're not necessarily being room, but also just a sense of they really want to ensure that he's not being rushed into the NHL. And that's something historically the Leafs have been victims of rushing young defensemen into the NHL before they're actually ready. And sadly enough, and it kind of goes back to your previous question, when you think of the cap, you know, there has to be a lot of gymnastics that way. I want to say, you know, Liljegren does have some performance bonuses on his deal. Katja Nappi at Pension Plan Publish wrote a great article about it today. So I think it might be some cap complications that may keep him out of the lineup, but at the same time, he hasn't necessarily done enough, at least as far as like what Rasmus Sandin has done, to really scream like, hey, I belong in the NHL. So I think it might be another year for him where he starts the year in the AHL, and then maybe if there's an injury, he kind of gets that step up. But you know, I've always have been a fan of Liljegren. I've always liked the way he plays, and I think he's a lot more defensive that people give him credit for. Yes, you know, we focus on the long stretch passes and stuff, but I think the way he plays away from the puck, and especially the way that he holds the boards and kind of contains players on that side of the ice, is really great. And you saw a lot of that in the preseason. So I think what Leafs fans in general should be expecting from him this year is kind of a full blown I'm too good for this league season in the AHL, and just force the hand of the Leafs, just because I think that yes, the top four is set to an extent with, you know, with Riley and Hall and TJ Brody and Jake Muzzin. But I think there are still some instances where players can kind of force their way up into the lineup. And after what happened last season, I think Sheldon Keefe isn't necessarily married to one specific thing within the team, and that if something isn't working, I think he'll be willing to try it out and play different players in different situations. And I think the fact that we've seen Liljegren play with Jake Muzzin a lot this preseason has been very telling as well. So hopefully, you know, he really has a great start to the year and tries to force the Leafs hand a little bit. But I think Liljegren is a player that the Leafs should not move on from quickly. I know there are a lot of fans who kind of want who are maybe say like, yeah, you know, he's been in the organization for 5 years. You know, it's either, you know, do something with them or move him on. But I think Liljegren's a player worth waiting for, definitely.
Looking at the opposing team in the quarterfinals, two or four big, strong defenders playing, boxing out the forwards more or less from the danger area. Mm-hmm. And we saw Islanders working with that kind of way. We've seen other teams adjust during the offseason to a similar kind of system. Has the Leafs done that as well?
I don't think so. I think the Leafs system is kind of, at least as far as their defense has been, is more activating. All right. Especially in the preseason, we are seeing a lot of defensemen activating off the rush and kind of joining up. And trying to be aware of when, you know, the puck gets turned over and it, obviously having the ability to get back. But I think it's been more of a kind of push the pace type of system. Like for example, like Rasmus Sandin, like a lot in the preseason games, you're seeing him jump up in the rush, you know, try to make plays, cross crease passes and all that type of stuff. So, but at the same time, that wasn't necessarily working for the Leafs last year, right? And with, you know, Dave Haxtell, who was the Leafs defensive coach last year, moving on to Seattle, and with new assistant coaching kind of going into play, it'd be interesting to see what aspects of last year's defensive coverage stay the same and what aspects of it change. But I don't necessarily think that the goal or that the mission is to be kind of more of a box out defensive style. I think it's going to be more of kind of take care of the puck and be aware of what's going on, but at the same time push the pace to spend more time in the offensive zone so you don't have to spend so much time defending. And whether that's going to work or not, who knows? But it definitely is interesting to see different teams kind of adapt that that more of a box out style. But the Leafs have always kind of tried to be more of a dynamic, push the pace team, for better and for worse.
That is the defense, really. But it's also interesting, you're bringing out Peter Mrazek into the goalie situation. Jack Campbell had a standout year last year. What can we expect from them in regards maybe to this high-powered or high-octane defense that you're describing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bexel, because I don't know. I don't know. And I think that's the worst area to have question marks is in your goaltending. Because the Leafs have made it clear that they're trying to run a tandem set in some way, shape, or form. Boston was doing it with Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak. Yes, Rask is the number one, and there was never any doubt in Boston's mind who the number one goaltender was, because once the playoffs hit, it was just Rask. But throughout the season, him and Halak would go back and forth. But this season, I don't know. I think it's clear that Jack Campbell will get the initial nod, just given respect to what he was able to do last season. But at the point where if one goalie is hot, they're just going to keep that one goalie in. And I think that'd be great if both goaltenders are good, but on the reverse hand, if both goaltenders are bad and they can't stop pucks, then that's going to make it really hard to really establish, confidence, structure, whatever you want to call it. And I think one of the big reasons or one of the big things that I think was holding the team back last year was that they didn't have confidence in their goaltending. If Michael Hutchinson was in the net, you wouldn't know if he's shutting out the Oilers or if he's getting lit up by Ottawa. When Frederick Anderson was in, you don't know if he's going to be the Frederick Anderson from the first three seasons he's on the Leafs or the current Frederick Anderson of what we saw last year of when five whole goals and wraparound goals are being let in all the time. So I think that's going to be the most important thing is just establishing confidence. Whoever is in the net, they need to know that, okay, we're going to get some solid goaltending. They're going to give us a chance to win. And at this point, I don't know if it's going to be solely Jack Campbell. I don't know if it's going to be solely Peter Mrazek. I don't know if it's going to be both, but one of them needs to definitely take the reins. And I know the benefits of having two goaltenders to kind of push the other one and keep them competitive or whatever. I can understand that definitely, but you need to have that confidence that whoever is between the pipes, they're going to give us a chance to win. Because I don't know that just, it clearly changes the way that the players play when they're not confident in their goaltender. And I think especially if the Leafs want to play this high pace, dynamic system where you have defensemen jumping up in the rush, then you need to be confident that, hey, if something goes wrong, if there's a bad bounce and it ends up turning into, a rush going back, that at the very least we could get a save. And, just one save can make the difference, Indeed. Habs fans should know this. You've had Carey Price for eons. One or a couple saves, it makes a difference, right?
Yeah, was it game five, right?
Game six, overtime. The Leafs came out, shot to 13-1. Travis Dermott decided to do a spinorama in the defensive zone goal.
Yeah. Well, in some way it hurts, and in some ways it doesn't. So I'll be honest. I suffered in my football fandom, so I know the feelings in others losing the championship to the arch rivals in the last game of the season when they play each other and stuff like that. So I definitely know the feeling. We're listening to Omar, TikTok Omar at Twitter. Follow him, Leaf expert to the bone, as you can hear. Great insights here, Omar. Thank you for joining us, really. Looking to the forwards, it's an amazing forward group. It was obviously terrible what happened to Tavares last year. Mm-hmm. Total freak accident. I'm glad that he's back. I'm glad that he's playing. You want to see the best players play, no matter which team they play for. But on the other hand, you also have possibly one of the best players in the world right now in Auston Matthews.
Yeah. It's incredible what Matthews has done in his career so far. And especially when you watch the documentary. So for those who want to watch it, cool. Just knowing that he was going through wrist injuries the entire season, but still was able to put up 40 goals. Yes, granted, against the same six teams, but it's incredible what he's able to do and how much better he's grown into a two-way player. I think obviously when it comes to Matthews, we focus on the goals and the finesse and the toe drags and stuff, but he's really grown as a defensive player as well, to the point where for a lot of last season, he wasn't necessarily contained. And I guess that's what makes the playoffs a little frustrating, because it's like, the whole season you were dominant. What happened? So Matthews, I think Matthews is going to come into the season on a mission to not repeat what happened last year. And I think he's going to continue to grow his game and become a reliable player that you can play in all situations, not just when you need a goal. So I think that'll be interesting interesting to see. And then as far as Tavares goes, yeah, you can just see how much he means to the team. I think that's what makes the loss so frustrating, is because it's a miracle of how quick he got back at it.
It was a miracle it didn't turn out to be anything worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like the fact that he was skating, he was around the team, like games 5, 6, and 7, like if they won the series, he probably could have been back in the second round against Winnipeg, right? So I think he's another player as well who I think will definitely push the pace a lot. I remember last season, there was some instances where, his 5-on-5 scoring was kind of down. He's scoring on the power play, but he went a long stretch without scoring a goal at 5-on-5. And I think those are the things that he's going to work on to ensure that, at any point, regardless of who is playing, whether it's him or whether it's Matthews, that, there'll be a chance to dominate, to have possession of the puck in the offensive zone and to put up offense. Whether it's on 5-on-5 or the power play. And this goes back to what I said in the beginning of the season, beginning of our conversation, is that, if the Leafs are going to do the thing, if the Leafs are going to do anything in the playoffs, it's going to be off the back of their best players. And that includes Matthews and Tavares.
I have to ask one thing, because I saw Matthews in NLA, and what I remember is his ridiculous wrist shot and obviously being, how media trained he was, because it was my first interview with one of the stars, and yeah, I was rocketed by him. I could be honest and say that now, a couple of years later. But even if he's almost a point per game player in the playoffs, he hasn't really passed, not even in the NLA, where Zurich obviously is the big guys, along with Byrne. He hasn't progressed past the first round.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's what, And you can say that for any of the star players, right? We're at a point now within this Matthews era where the regular season doesn't matter, right? Matthews could rip 60 goals and it'd be cool. But the next thing is going to be like, okay, are you going to do that in the playoffs, right? I think the only year where Matthews has been dominant offensively in the playoffs was that rookie season against Washington, where I think he had like 4 goals. But after that, it's always been a struggle for him. And whether it's just not feeling the puck the right way, or maybe just, the teams are kind of just like locking down on him more. It seems like there's been a struggle to score. And I think that's the next test, the next step, right? Again, you see players, like I go back to Braden Point all the time, because he just, when the playoffs start, there's like a button in Braden Point's mind. And it's just like, okay, overdrive. Like, we're just going to power up. And he just goes nuts, just like points like over and over again. So like, can they get to that point? Can Matthews and Marner get to that point? We've seen it from Nylander. Nylander was the only one of the core four to actually step up. Granted, again, Tavares injury, not his fault, right? But Nylander took his game to a new level. We need to see that from Matthews and Marner. We need to see them say, you know what? We're not going to lose this series. We're not going to lose this game. We're not going to lose this period. This is our game. We're going to take control. And we haven't seen that yet in the playoffs. And I think that's what we need to see. And I, at the same time, I also think that's why there's been a lot of animosity towards those two players from the Leafs fandom this summer, is that whatever they do in the regular season, it is not going to matter until they do it in the playoffs.
Sheldon Keefe, hot seat or not?
Sheldon Keefe, man, Sheldon Keefe, I was so mad at Sheldon Keefe once the series ended, because I was just like screaming. I'm like, why didn't he move anything around? Like, why were the same lines just going? I think you don't want to make excuses, and I know that's a big thing that, you know, that some Leafs fans try to do, you know, the whole ifs and buts thing. And yeah, you know, losing Tavares sucked. Especially when it comes to, like, you know, when it came to the power play, or when it came to just the possibility of moving things around, because if Tavares is still in the lineup, then you can say, okay, we'll move things around. Maybe put Marner with Tavares, who, and they, you know, those two have you know, natural chemistry, and they've been playing, they played really well together in the past. Nylander and Matthews were disgusting their first couple of years together. So you could argue, like, that's an option that Keefe could have done, but, you know, Tavares wasn't there. Again, my mentality and my thought process towards Keefe has definitely changed after watching the documentary, because a lot of the issues that we saw in the playoffs, Keefe identified from like the first 10 games of the season, and like actively challenged the players to say, hey, yeah, we're winning games, but we're winning games in a certain way that isn't going to cut it in the playoffs. Like, it's a 5-1 game, but we're still on our heels, and we still think that there's a chance to lose the game, right? So, you know, Keefe, I think, is the guy. I think Keefe will be the coach to get the team over the hump, because he understands and he knows that just winning games isn't enough, and he communicates that to the players. So I think what it's going to come down to is whether the players can believe that themselves. And if they do, or if they can, then cool, then that can lead to some great success down the line. And if not, then that's when you have to start making some changes as far as player personnel goes, and whatever that's going to be, who knows? Is Dubas going to be there to make those changes if the Leafs lose again? Who knows? But I think for Keefe, I think Keefe has a lot of has the style and has the system, and just has that fearlessness to communicate what is necessary and what needs to happen for the team to have success. So I'm really looking forward to what he does this season with, you know, with his first full 82 game season now as coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Is it going to be the ketchup effect where if you go through the first round that you actually manage to go all the way?
I don't know. It's the bar is so low, right? Like, the bar is so disgustingly low, where all we want for them is just to win a round. Personally, I would like to see more, but at the same time, if they win a round, like, it'll be great. If they win a round and then get knocked out in the second round, like in five games, like, it's still not going to be a great feeling, but I guess you could argue it's something to build off of. I had that perspective last season, where just win a round and then we'll see what will take place. But I don't think that kind of runaway effect can happen this season. Last season, it could definitely
Tampa in the other bracket, right?
Exactly, right? Like, last year, you could argue, yeah, you went around, and who knows? Like, last year was the it hurts. Last year was the easiest path to a conference final ever
for a Canadian team.
For a Canadian team, right? And this is not to take away from what the Habs did. Incredible run, and honestly, like, it pained me so much, just because I kept thinking, like, this could have been us. This could have been us, you know, taking out Vegas. This could have been us in the Stanley Cup final. But this season is different. You're back to normal. You're back to how it was before. Tampa is still Tampa. Boston is still Boston, right? You know, who knows what happens with the Habs? I know a lot of people are writing them off and stuff, but okay, yeah, but sure. Like, people wrote off the Habs last year, and what happened? Win series, right? Ottawa is going to be a better team. And Ottawa is a team the Leafs always have struggles with. Florida is going to be a better team.
Detroit is going to be a better team. well.
So it's not going to be easy. It really isn't. And I think what the Leafs need to get rid of, they need to get rid of the perspective of just because they're doing well doesn't mean they're at their best or doesn't mean that they are best. And that was a line that I keep referencing the documentary because like it really gives a lot of insight into what took place last season. The point of, well, we're first in the division continuously got brought up. Cool. You're first in the division. And then what happened? Right. So I think what the Leafs need to have every single game needs to matter. Every single game needs to matter. It doesn't matter if it's Saturday night in October. It doesn't matter if it's a Tuesday night in February. Every game needs to matter because that feeling is going to carry on to the playoffs where every single game matters. It's not going to be easy to make the playoffs. You can't just coast through the season and then just score your way into the playoffs this year. It's not going to work because all the Atlantic Division as a whole is better. Before, it was just Leafs, Tampa, Boston. And then Montreal would come in. But now you can argue the majority of the division is going to make it difficult, right? And so they can't afford to have that mentality. They have to come in and they have to do what Keith and Shanahan and Dubas have been talking about since in the last season. They need to find that killer instinct and they need to use the regular season to develop and grow that killer instinct such that if they're in the playoffs and there's a situation where they can put away a team, you put them away. You don't give them an opportunity to battle back, to get momentum. Don't allow a goal in the last minute of a period. Don't allow two quick goals in succession. You're winning the game, win the game, and that's it. So I think that's going to be a big thing from this season. And hopefully Keith really pushes and enhances that message throughout the year.
We're listening to Omar. He's a great guy, as you can hear. I'm going to finish off with one last question, actually, Omar.
Sure.
Is there any prospects in your system that we should be aware of is coming up? Or obviously, maybe not make the team today, but make the team next year that we should be aware of is on the rise?
Yeah, and it's funny. Like this player is generally linked to your Cole Caulfield a lot. Nick Robertson. A lot of eyes on Nick Robertson and what he's been able to do. Last year he quote unquote benefited from this weird format where teenagers were able to play in the AHL, but his season was just riddled with injuries. Anytime he played one game with the Leafs and then got injured. Was playing with the Marlies, is starting to kind of get some jam, get some mojo, and got injured as well. And this year you can really tell that he's desperately trying to make an impression on the team. But it's not going to be difficult, right? It's not going to be difficult for a prospect to make the team because again of all the depth signings that the Leafs made over the offseason. But Robertson, he's a tenacious player. He's clearly better than his peers. As far as full on scoring, the shot is there. He has the NHL shot. It's accurate. It's quick. Another thing that's been really good to see is that his ability as a penalty killer has really shown up, and we've seen that in the preseason. Just because of how relentless he is on the puck and how he attacks the opposition and tries to force turnovers. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see. And I think that if there's an opportunity where there's an injury on the left side, don't be surprised to see Robertson get that call up and get an opportunity to play if the opportunity presents itself. But I think Nick Robertson is definitely, if not a player this year, then definitely next year that the Leafs will likely rely on, especially now that the left side is relatively open.
Thank you, Omar. A privilege. I hope I can come back to you during the season, maybe even for one of the series, back-to-back series that Toronto and Montreal might have, because I don't know the schedule in my head right now.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. If you want to talk about, if things that are going wrong,
or things that go right, let's be honest.
Yeah, but when it comes to the Leafs, the Leafs embody Murphy's Law. Whatever can go wrong does go wrong, so we'll see.
Thank you, Omar. Follow him on Twitter at Tic Tac Omar, and we will for sure have him back on the pod because it's been brilliant. Thank you.
No problem.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.